going to happen. I'm telling you, if you don't quit fooling around, it's going to catch up with you. If you don't quit pushing your luck, it's going to reach right out of the pivot hedges and grab you. Why do you know what? Yes, if you don't stop pushing your luck, it's just going to reach out and grab you. About 10 minutes ago, I'm walking through Times Square under that fantastic sign that says the Bible in CinemaScope, widescreen, ultrascope, erotic color. It's spread out all across the sky there, and the lights are lighting up. And in the middle of it all, there's a guy walking right down the sidewalk there with 16,000 people. And of course, you know what Times Square is like, you know. But was walking up and down. Anyway, he's walking down Times Square, and he's got a big sign. Holding it up, it's about 15 stories high, it looks like. It's got a big high pole, and on the top of the sign simply says, "Sin now, pay later." Which I kind of think puts it in sort of a nutshell. You know, it's not a bad idea. I wonder where it is. There must be some place where you can put it all on credit. Sign for the whole shebang, you know, as we go marching towards the edge of the cliff. If you were to select music to go over the cliff by, music to go into the abyss with, alongside the whole crowd, you know, entire mankind is with you. Bring it up there, man. Terrible singer. But one thing about that, it's all style, and you know, speaking of style, and I don't know what the meaning of this is here. I'm a great reader of out of town newspapers, and sometimes when you read out-of-town newspapers, you can tell what's happening out there in the world. That is, aside from what's happening right here in New York, which is not exactly the world. Here's one from Hunterdon County Democrat, which is in New Jersey, Flemington, New Jersey. It's a one-ad. It said, "Free horse manure, basket or truck, rich from registered Arabian horses." I guess that's the best kind. I don't know. It's funny that it's free, though, so I guess you can't complain, because that's the way life is. A lot of that is free anyway. It's carried around the basket. But then again, on the other hand, speaking of that, in the New Yorker here on February 13th, right here, there's an ad that shows this angry-looking lady, and she's looking at her cat. And under the picture of this angry-looking lady, you see this caption. It says, "For women, can't make shirts, not blouses." Lays it out there. It's funny how surprisingly realistic a lot of this stuff gets. And before we go any further, would you please hit the money button in there, George, please.
Miller High Life, the bright, clear taste in beer. Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
There's only one champagne of bottled beer. Sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Miller High Life. Brewed only in Milwaukee from a century-old recipe, Miller High Life has a rich heritage and tradition. A bright, clear taste, unequaled, unquestioned, unchanging. Available on tap, in cans, and in the familiar crystal clear bottle. Miller High Life is always sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Enjoy Miller High Life yourself.
Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
Yes, Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
Yes, somebody sent me this three-color ad here. It's kind of a nice one, too. It's very pretty. It's in soft pastel shades. And it's called a grenade lighter. And it shows a hand here holding it. You see, it's a real grenade, too. And it really looks, something. It looks and feels like a real hand grenade. But pull the ring or push the button and you get an immediate light. They go on to say, realistic reproduction of a grenade assures this lighter of long, hard use, for it is a real conversation piece and a unique gift. Now, the key word in this, of course, is long, hard use. It's the kind of thing you just don't get tired of. Obviously, grenades have had a deep fascination for people since time began. And I can see a lot of different... This is a new idea in conversation pieces, actually. Grenade. Here, Charlie, watch. Here, catch. That'll cause a little excitement. I can see a whole new area of decor breaking out like this. For example, you can have a bazooka shell. Now, that's interesting looking. Have you ever seen a bazooka shell, man? Very attractive. It's very functional looking. Very streamlined. Very looks very interesting. A bazooka shell that actually is an electric can opener. You just hook it. It's a lot of conversation. What's that over there, Myrtle? It's, well, nothing. Watch. And it costs electricity. Then there's other things, too. I kind of think an 80-millimeter mortar shell would make a kind of a nice ashtray. Keep things moving in your house. Although, I remember I did have an uncle. You know, it's a strange thing. I had an uncle who was in World War I. And this uncle had his house. He had all kinds of stuff like that sitting around the house. For example, he had, as an umbrella stand, he had a gigantic shell. It was one of these big Bertha kinds, and a big bronze shell. It was about 3.5 feet tall. It had been shot off at somebody. He just had the cartridge on there it was, and he had his canes and umbrellas and fishing rods and stuff. And that was the first thing you saw when you came in the house. And then after you got closer into the house, you know, the different things, he had, for example, he had 105 shells cut off for ashtrays, little 105 shells. And as paperweights, he had things like 30-06 cartridges with the paperweights. And he was my nice uncle. And actually, he was not a warlike uncle. He just was something very basic about this thing. Now, if James Bond did not carry guns, I suspect James Bond would not be nearly as attractive to people. I mean, he carries big Roscoes. He's really, I mean, he shows up with a Roscoe, I'll tell you. You never heard that expression? Is that not an expression used here in the East, Roscoe? Well, I remember as a kid, one of the first times I ever heard it said was the time that my father was working in this office, and a guy came in and held up the office where he was working. And there was a lot of excitement of people calling home. You know, they're calling to my mother and that. My father was the cashier in this place. And of course, he was held up in a big excitement. The newspapers were in. And my father came into the house, and my mother said, "What happened?" And my father, first thing he says, my father says, "Well, this guy came in. He was wearing a mask, and he pulled the biggest Roscoe out of his pocket you ever saw in your life. He pulled this Roscoe out, pointed it right in my face, and said, 'All right, hand it over.'" And I'm sitting there, I'm a little kid, you know, and the idea of a guy pulling a big Roscoe out of his pocket and pointing it at somebody's face, my old man's face, and saying, "Hand it over." And the old man wasn't particularly scared. He was kind of amazed that somebody would pull a Roscoe. There, by the way, there's a cartoon like that in the New Yorker. It's an odd little cartoon this week. It shows a very distinguished-looking guy. Looks a little bit like, sort of a cross between Eugene Pallette, maybe Dean Rusk, with a little touch of Bernard Baruch, and he's standing there talking to a friendly little old lady in the bank, and the little old lady is in the, let's see, what department is she? Oh, paying and receiving. She's friendly little old lady, you know, with a little lace collar, and he's standing there with his Chesterfield coat, he's got the velvet collar around there and his little striped tie, and he's holding an umbrella, a bumper chute, and he has a very pleasant look on his face. And he says, "It may come as something of a surprise to you, but this is a stick-up." And that's exactly the way. Have you ever been around when somebody got held up? You ever been around when something happened like that? It's never, believe me, so help me, it's never the way you think it's going to be. The only time I was ever anywhere near a real newspaper story of that kind, you know, the sudden crime breaks out, I could not believe it. I was sitting in a diner in Covington, Kentucky. Diner, you know, there we are. It's 2 o'clock. Well, that's already we got something going. Everybody said, "What the devil are you doing in Covington, Kentucky?" That's another story. That's a whole can of peas we won't even open up now. We might as well hit the money button before we get into this. Stick around. I'll tell you what happened in the diner. Hit it.
Hello.
Hello, is this Kloppman's Grocery?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
It doesn't sound like Kloppman.
Well, Mr. Kloppman's waiting on a customer.
I'm not a customer?
Oh, yes, ma'am. He'll be right here.
Who has time to wait for Kloppman? You write down my order. I want 2 pounds of sausage.
And 2 pounds of Parks' famous flavor sausage. Okay.
What Parks? I didn't say Parks.
Well, you want the best.
I'll wait for Kloppman.
Only Parks' famous flavor sausage has such an extravagant blend of spices and seasoning. Such quality. Listen.
Bring home the sausage, be a hero. Yes, bring home the sausage, P-A-R-K-S. Sausage to win ya. Sausage that's braver. Up from Virginia, Parks' famous flavor. Bring home more Parks' sausages, Mom.
Listen, you got such a great product. Why are you standing in a little corner grocery store singing on the telephone to a middle-aged housewife?
We love you.
Oh, man. Let's see. Speaking of middle-aged housewives, this is WORAM at FM New York. And we'll be here for a while. We don't have any more of those, do we? Oh, yes, indeed, we do. We have American heritage here. You know, I'm going to tell you something that's, I suppose, kind of embarrassing. I shouldn't tell it to you. That I have American heritage going back to its first issue, when it was a thin, very thin little magazine that, as a matter of fact, was not hardcover, and nobody knew anything about it. And how I got it, you know how I got it? It's a very, that in itself is an embarrassing thing. A friend of mine was taken by a, you know, these people that come around and knock on your door, and they say they're working their way through medical school, and if they can only get 4 more subscriptions, they will go over the top, and they will become famous, and they'll become a neurosurgeon or something like that, you know. And they come around. Well, he was taken, and he felt sorry for this guy, so he bought about 9 different magazines. And he decided what he was going to do was to give him his gifts instead of getting him. So he doesn't read, you know, he's an illiterate and all that. So he just racked out with the $75. And by George, all of a sudden, I started to get this peculiar magazine. And it was the number one issue, number one copy, the very first time that American Heritage came out. It was totally unknown. And for a long time, I was reading this thing and digging it. I kind of enjoy that. You know, it's funny how many people. The other night we did this this show about George Washington. All these people wrote me books about how I could read a book. And it says, you read this book and it'll tell you how Washington was. And you read this book and it'll tell you how Jefferson was. And I say bourgeois. Bourgeois. I have never known. I have known many a person that has been written about. I have known a lot of people in my life who have been written up in the paper, who have been written up in contemporary accounts. In fact, it's funny. I knew Malcolm X. I might as well tell you that. I knew Malcolm X, but he does not come out in any of the interviews or the paper accounts that I've read about him. He just isn't the way he's described, the way the newspapers describe him. And that is in person, when you're sitting down having a cup of coffee with Malcolm X. I have known other people who have been written up in newspapers, and they never are, and even in very serious books. In short, I don't believe the written account of a person can ever quite capture that person. And so I still wonder how George Washington really was when he's putting his teeth in the morning. You know, putting on his socks. He's got to go off to another hard day in the Revolution. He's sitting in his tent. Well, of course, he had a lot of hard days in the Revolution. He's sitting in his tent, you know. It's about the second or third year of the Revolution. The snow is up to the roof. And he's sitting in his tent, and they've been chased all over New Jersey, you know. And it looks like things are going from bad to worse, and now they're going even from worse to worser. And he's sitting in his tent, and he's pulling on his socks, and the wind is blowing in underneath the cot. And he hears a couple of guys griping out there, and another guy, fist fights breaking out there among the riflemen. And he puts his head in his hands, and he just sort of rubs his temples for a minute, you know, before he puts his wig on. So, boy, what a can of peas we've opened up here. What a can of peas. Oh, man. And these things are never brought out. Not in the contemporary accounts of them. Well, anyway, getting back to American Heritage, if you'd like to find out about it, send your name and address with a buck to American Heritage, Box 711. This is a big hardcover magazine now. It's very important. It costs $3.95 per issue. And it is highly entertaining. And if you'd like to try it, send your name and address with a buck to American Heritage, Box 711, Great Neck, New York. Okay, and they'll send you a representative copy. Now, before we go any further, you want to hear more about Covington? Oh, boy. Talk about opening can of peas. Holy smokes. I don't even know whether they use that expression here in New York. Open up a can of peas. You don't use that? What a can of peas. Before we go any further, tomorrow night we are at the Limelight. For the benefit of people who are constantly calling up here, we are here tomorrow night, and it's a full-length show, Matt. You're going to be down there. You better get ready for it. We come on at 10:05. You're not going tomorrow night? Oh, it's going to be full length. Oh, yeah. Oh, it isn't? I don't know. I can't keep up with these memos. They keep coming back and forth. We follow the basketball game then. And so it could be a full-length show. It could not, depending on how the ball game. But nevertheless, immediately following the game, we'll be on until midnight. And if you're scouting around, you're looking for a place to go, give them a call. Now, a lot of people have said, well, look, you haven't told us. I always tell you that you need reservations down there. However, I will say this, that quite often a lot of people in the flush of Monday morning, in the excitement of Tuesday, make a reservation, which they do not keep on Friday or Saturday. And almost everybody who's ever come down there that I know of has gotten in one way or another, in spite of not having a reservation. But if you'd like to find out about having a reservation for this weekend, give them a call. It's the Limelight in the Village, Sheridan Square. You come right down 7th Avenue South, and boom, we go on immediately following the ball. Oh, by the way, the show actually in the Limelight starts long before that. If you have a reservation, you better get down there by no later than, 9:45. No later than, I'd say 9:30 is about the best time to get down there. Any later than that, they say, forget it, Dad. They start letting them in. But it's a great place to sit around and have a coffee and just, schmooch. And we start immediately following the ball game until, oh, yeah, it's one of the very few places I know of, you'll agree with me, Matt, in New York City where almost anybody could feel at home in. Kids, big-type people, people with minks, everything, fist fights, the whole scene, anybody. A peculiar homogenous joint. Speaking of peculiar homogenous joints, that reminds me of Covington, Kentucky, at the diner. They had a diner there. Now I spent part of my checkered career one long hot summer. You know, whenever I see that title, the long hot summer, I am reminded of my own personal long hot summer. I was going to college. And I got myself a summer job working in this radio station in Cincinnati. And directly across the river was this festering town. Whoo, boy. You always hear of Chicago, that something town. What is it? Chicago, that... Now I forget that. How it goes. That something town, that great town? No. That swinging town? No. That what? I can't read you guys in here. Just forget it anyway. It's Chicago. That's something town. Well, every time I think of Covington and Newport, Kentucky, these are festering towns. Oh, boy, I tell you. And the heat lays down on the Ohio Valley right in that area. The Ohio River's right there, see? If you don't know your geography, Cincinnati lies in the very southernmost end of Ohio, way down at the end. And it's kind of like a country by itself. For those of you who don't know Cincinnati, I can only say that John Gunther, in his book, Inside America, he said, what would be the 10? He said, if people were to ask me, what were the 10 most cosmopolitan towns in the United States, I would have to list 1, New York, believe it or not. 2, San Francisco. 3, Cincinnati. A curious city. Now, he means cosmopolitan. He does not mean European. He means cosmopolitan. It is a strangely European city because it was largely settled by Germans back around the turn of the century. And in fact, the entire area down there is called the Rhineland. It's called the Rhineland. At the Queen City of the West, and it's a strange, isolated town. Well, directly across from Cincinnati, the river there must be a mile and a half wide. It's a giant river. Oh, yeah, it's much wider than any of our rivers here. It would be as if you took the Hudson, the Harlem, and the East River all together and put them side by side. The Ohio River is a good mile across at that point. And across that river, there are two or three suspension bridges that lay from Cincinnati across to that dark, lowering shore with the great towering hills that go higher and higher and sort of roll off to the west. That is KY, Kentucky. And that's a kind of mysterious land to even the people who live in Cincinnati. It's just a very different world. You know how the Jerseyites are very different to people who live in New York? Somehow living in Jersey is a whole new mystique. Well, multiply that by 500, and you have the difference between Cincinnati and Kentucky. The accent is different. Everything. The whole scene. And the heat. Ooh, boy, the heat lays there. That heat just sort of lays down in that river. And about August, you can smell the river. And it does. Now, it isn't a smell. It isn't a smell of decay or anything. It's just the river. It's kind of a green, watery, catfish, heat, cattail, sort of soil, mud, life smell. It's a strange smell, and it permeates the whole atmosphere all around. And across the river, in Covington and in Newport, these two towns lay there. And they're famous for a lot of things. Let me tell you, these towns really, really go. And at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on Madison Avenue in Kentucky, out across in Newport, The towns are wide open, wild, just not the kind of wide open like Times Square, but a different kind. They have juke joints. This is a Kentucky version of the discotheque, and very different. A great big red and green jukebox over in the corner there, and it's playing Elvis Presley records. Hound dog, you hound dog, you rattle hound dog. It comes out night after night, and the sound of twanging guitars lay out there across that brick road, just like snow drifting down out of the sky. You can hear those guitars and those banjos a twanging, and you can hear those strange nasal voices. And they wander around the streets at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the one sound that you hear at maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, it's the sound of guys roaring up and down the streets that have come up from Hazard, Kentucky and Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. Yeah, there's a town called Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. And they roar up and down the streets in their hot rods. They're really not hot rods. They're 47 Mercuries. They're 53 Fords that have been channeled, cut down, and painted purple. You know, that kind of thing. And you hear, wow! Get out of my way, yeah, wow. Well, that's life among the Aborigines. It's really something out there. It's a wild scene. And so I'm living in this. See, I've got a pad above a jewelry store. Right in the heart of the swinging belt in Covington, it would be like having, literally, it would be like having an apartment over a juice joint, the place where they sell orange juice, right at 46th and Broadway. And I kind of laughed. And so my apartment was never dark, man, never. It was lit from the outside by red neon lights. No matter what happened, I pull the shades, it comes through. It soaks in through the walls, and you can feel the jukeboxes. Heat, oh, boy. It's like 170 degrees all the time in there. And I could smell the catfish. I could smell the catfish in the river. And I could smell the water going past. You could literally smell it and feel it. And once in a while, out on the river, the riverboat would go by. I don't know whether any of you have ever heard the sound of a stern wheeler going past a block and a half from your house with the calliope going. It is a wild sound. And yeah, you can hear it drifting. At 2 o'clock in the morning, you hear boop, 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 boop. That would be when it was on its trip out. And then when it's coming back, the calliope is turned off, and all you hear is chook, 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 chook. That's the way a paddle wheeler sounds from a block away. Chook, 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 chook. and she drips into the landing down there. And then, boop, boop. And that's it, silence. Well, about a half a block down the street from me was the Wheel Inn Diner. How about that for a name? The Wheel Inn Diner. And it had a great big neon wheel that reached up about 75 feet in the air, you know, like a truck wheel. And it was one of those that spun around and go, wheeling, wheeling, it would say. In green, wheeling, wheeling, big red wheel. And then it would be a big arrow that cut right across it said, eat, eat, eat. And all the time it's pointing, wheeling, wheeling. Well, every night about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't sleep in this sweat box I lived in. And I could hear the jukeboxes going. And there was a guy who lived directly behind me, right across the court. The court was about 7 feet square. And this guy lived in the rear apartment, who was a cab driver. And he would drive in at exactly 2 o'clock in the morning and beat up his wife. He would drive in, and she loved it. He would drive in. I'd hear that Ford cab come in, and I would hear it pull up behind my apartment under the window, and I knew I'd be lying there in my sack trying to sleep. See, oh, well, it's hot, and I could hear way off in the distance the calliope, and I could hear the jukeboxes going. I hear the knife fights breaking off down at Delaney's. They had fights up and down the street constantly, and I'd hear the roar of the hot rod. They're always making with the brakes, you know. And then I would hear those Kentucky voices, get out of my way! Who you talking to like that? Well, that was life. That was life on Madison Avenue. That was a very different, believe it or not, it's called Madison Avenue. Very different Madison Avenue. Whenever I see the name Madison Avenue, I have two images, double images, you know. I could smell the catfish, and I'm lying there, and I hear that guy's Ford with the bad tappets come in. It stops. Silence. Plunk. And he's mad. Boom. He has lost $40 on the ponies. You know, boom. Slams the door. And then I hear. Dip, 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 dip. I'm lying there. Here it comes. Silence. And then I would hear the first. Boom. Her head hitting the wall. You're going to get out. I will kill you one day, Clem. I will kill you. Oh, yeah? Boom. Oh, come on. When I first moved in there, I used to holler out at him, you know. And then it turned out that I was making the wife mad. So I gave that up. So that was the way it was. All right, now you got the picture. Well, every night when I found I couldn't sleep, which was every night about 2, 2.30, I would get up. And remember, I had a radio program at 5 a.m. So I would get up, and I would walk down onto that brick road, and I would see the purple Fords going past and hear the yelling and the hollering and the guitars crunching over other guys' heads, and I could hear the knives going into ribs. And I would walk down to the middle of the next block to the Wheel Inn Diner. And it was brightly lit. You know how diners are with the big white lights all over the place and the chrome and the stainless steel and everything. It was very antiseptic. And always back at the counter is Clem, big fat guy. He's back there, and always say, "Hi, boy." I'd come in. They didn't know. They were all, "Hi, boy." That's Kentucky. "Hi, boy." And there was a woman there named Emily who worked behind the counter, big fat blonde who had rings all over her. And she had big earrings that hung down to her knees, you know, that kind of stuff. And she's working back there with a white costume. I'd come in. I'd sit down in the middle there. And two or three guys, truck drivers, would be down at the other end. A couple of truck drivers would be at the other end. And then there would be two or three people on dates, what euphemistically were called dates in Kentucky. Oh, wow. You never saw more ad noise in your life. And I'm sitting there. No, it's really a little surprising, you know, to see a pair of ad noids come in with feet. Literally, you know, with a hat on top. And they'd sit down there at the other end. I hear this voice is twanging. The jukebox starts roaring out. Ernest Tubb record is booming out. Or maybe the Delmore Twins are racking it out. Or Grandpa Jones starts singing, "I want to come back to you, baby. Pow. I want to come back to you now. Pow, pow, pow. I want to come back. I want to come back. Pow, 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 pow. I'm a-going to go." Oh, boy. So I'm leaning back there, drinking my... I always would come in and get myself a vanilla malt, It was the only thing that was cold, and it was cold, and I didn't, the Cokes were sweet, and I'd sit and drink my vanilla malt and eat a hamburger and sort of kill time. That's all. And the neon signs are flashing. This is really American life, you know. This is pure, distilled American life. Well, one night I'm sitting there. It must have been about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, just sitting there. Clambers back of the cash register, one of these big chrome jobs, you know, sitting there picking his teeth, reading the police gazette. And the big old waitress is putting some more pies into the case. Everything is going normal. A couple of clots are sitting up there in the front there with their jackets on and their jazzy little, you know, the little hats with the white bills, their motorcycle type things. The world is going along when suddenly the door opens. They had these sliding doors, and it was an air-conditioned place. That's really why I came there. And they had these little sliding doors. Out, and the door slides open. And in steps a chick. A chick, a real chick. She was about 18 years old. Real, you know, and she was sort of dark-haired and looked very, very civilized. And I said, well, hi, George. And the chick comes in and sits down at the end booth. They had little tiny booths in it. She sits at the end booth. Clem starts to get up. He's going to walk over and see what she wants. And he's got a couple of menus in his hand. And Clem walks over towards her. And in then came her little brother. Her little brother looked like he was about, I'd say, 10. 12, something like that. This kid comes in, and he's wearing a sweater, you know, a little sleeveless type sweater with a pair of chinos, and he sits down there with her. And Clem goes over and says, well, what do you want, folks? The girl takes the menu, and she looks at it. I'm eyeing the chick, Sam. Things are picking up here. And so I turn, you see, and I'm watching her now in the mirror. They had a mirror right back at the bar, see. And I'm sitting there watching her and drinking my malt and knocking down the cheeseburger, and I'm trying to play it cool. I'm sitting there saying, well, she's got to see this profile. Eventually, she's got to see it. See, I'm watching the thing. Man. I'm giving her the eye, and she is paying no attention, and she's sitting there with her kid brother. And Clem goes back around the counter, and now he gets a pair of a couple of pieces of pumpkin pie or something. He comes out with a pie, and he's got the Coke and a candy or whatever it is, and he goes back, and he puts it down in his little chit-chat, and he comes back and sits down then, back at a cash register. And I'm watching that. I'm slopping up that vanilla malt. And outside, Kentucky is going out. Wow! You know? Wow! I want my sunshine, my little sunshine. You are my sunshine, Parodita. It's going on out there. Oh, and you have never lived until you have heard somebody sing through one nostril. At 5 o'clock in the morning, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make my life go all the way. Ba-da-do-da-o-da-o. Well, that's the way they sound. They go in and out, you know, night of, I'm sitting there, and their life is just rich and full. Now, Ernie Tubb is roaring out of the jukebox, and I'm watching the chick. I'm really on the make, looking at the scene over there. I'm knocking down the malt. And Clem is looking at me. See, Clem realizes that old Shep is going to go into high gear here any second now. See, and he's looking at me. He's got a kind of got that. You know how fat men grin? He's got that fat man grin, you know. He's just half grin there. It's a little unshaven. And I'm watching the chick. And she's looking in her purse. See, I see she's going through a purse. And I figure, well, you know, she's going to get out the compact. She's going to do a little nose dusting. I've always had, you know, this is the thing that men know. You know, whenever they get the attention of the chick, somehow they get a little flustered, you know, and they start lighting cigarettes or something. So she's, I said, I'm beginning to make the scene here. I'm scoring a little bit. She's looking in her purse. And she reaches down in her purse. And she pulls something out. That is the first time I have ever seen a blue steel compact. I look again, you know, I can't believe it. She has got a Roscoe mat that must have weighed 4.25 pounds. This thing was at least a 105 howitzer. I never saw anything like it. I sort of squinched back. Without saying a word, this chick gets up and walks over to Clem, holds this thing up, and said in a nice, clearly modulated voice with just the touch of a southern accent, "This is a stick-up." There was a silence that you could have cut with a butter knife. In spite of the jukebox roaring, in spite of the of the 47 Mercuries that were surrounding us for all miles on end. We just sat there, the truck drivers, said, this is a stick-up. Glenn said, what? He holds the gun up, doesn't say anything, just points it right at his head. He said, oh, I see. He gets up there, you know, he's a fat man. He starts to hitch up his pants. He said, pull up your hands. Oh, I see. And she walks back at the counter and hits the no-sale thing. Boing! With that, this little kid gets up, and he's got a knife in his mitt and a bag. He comes over, and he's shoveling the money in, and there she stands with the Roscoe on all of us. Holy smokes. What do you do now, Matt? Well, she comes out from behind the counter, and Clem is standing there with his mouth hanging. I would just say, he ain't moving. He's sweating. The air conditioning is going. The temperature is 34 degrees in this joint. And he's sweating. He just stand there. He ain't moving an eyeball. He isn't going to move. And she comes back from around the counter, and she walks up to each one of us. She says, give me a wallet. Come on. Come on. Put it on the counter there. And each one of us reaches in his pocket and lays it out. Sit there. Boom. Boom. It's the only time in my life I ever got robbed at gunpoint. Boom. Boom. There is five wallets laid out along that four mica counter. Boom, boom, boom. With the ice water. Boom, boom, boom. Between the cheeseburgers. And there ain't a muscle being moved. And she just walks along and picks each one up as she goes. Plunk, plunk, in the bag. The kid's following her. And she's got the Roscoe. Turns around. She says, I want to thank all of you. Backs out of the joint and then stops by the door. She says, stay away from the phone. Count 10. And then you can call anyone you want. She slides the door open, and they're out in the night. And we sat there for a second. And then out in the parking lot, you heard, whoom, whoom, wow, whoom, off in the distance. I tell you, crime don't look the way it should look. It just don't look the way it looks on Route 66, Matt. Crime don't look that way. I'll tell you that. It just don't. And we're sitting there, all of us, the whole crowd of us are sitting there kind of with that sweaty feeling inside. And finally, Clem said, I guess we better call the police. And somebody sitting down at the other end of the counter says, what are you talking about, Clem? That won't do you no damn bit of good. And Clem said, well, better call them anyway. And the guy at the other guy said, okay, Clem, he said, use your dime. You got a dime left? And so we start looking for dimes. We're complained, you know. No, we got no driver's license. The whole scene is gone. I've lost my $19, the whole bit, you know. And so we start looking for dimes, and finally somebody comes up with a dime and goes around, you know, puts it in the water there. They all back up to the thing in the slot and makes the call. And we sat there. And we sat and waited. 15 minutes go by, 20 minutes, and finally that big old car with that flashing red light shows up out in front. And a couple of these real big Covington, Kentucky policemen get out. Oh, man. They get out, they come walking in, you know, they got the big black belts around their waist, you know, and a couple of Roscoes hanging on each side, and they come walking in. What's going on in here? And Clem says, we've been held up. Yeah, well, all right. Let's have a description. All of you sit down here. Give me a description. That's right. He gets out his notebook. And Clem says, well, it was a girl. A girl, kind of a dark, pretty girl come in here. He says, oh, I know. That's Clara. Yeah, okay. That's Clara. Yeah, that's Clara. She's been knocking over joints all around. She just come up from, I believe, she come up from Louisville. Yeah, okay. What time she in here? Let's see, what time is it now? It's 17 minutes past 3. Sir, what time? We figured about 10 minutes to 3. She came in here? Okay. 2:51. Was she accompanied? And yeah, she came with a little kid. Yeah, that's Howard. Okay, Howard came in here. We're sitting there. This just don't look like Route 66, you know? This ain't the way it should be. And one of the guys at the end says, you think you'll get him? Think you'll get him, Sheriff? I ain't no sheriff, but I don't think so, no. So I figure we'll get him about spring, maybe. We'll get him next spring. So we'll get him Don't worry about it. The tipper says, well, what about my driver's license? And you just got to go down to City Hall tomorrow, tell them that Claire was around, that's all. Maybe they'll find it in the river. Out they go. And I hear the sound. Off goes the fuzz. Well, I sat there for a minute, put my straw in my mouth. Clem sits down at the other end. And I'm reaching in my pocket to pay. Clem says, down the house tonight. We're all busted. I go out into the darkness now. It's now about 3:45. The heat is laying down on me. A couple of mercuries go by, and I can hear the jukeboxes roaring out of the next juke joint. And I can hear Ernest Tubb wailing in the darkness out there. And somewhere off in the distance, the old paddle wheeler is getting ready to make its first morning trip. Choo, 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 choo. Oh, life is rich. Life is real. Life is life. I'm the sheep. The sheep of Araby. And your love, baby, belongs to me. Some night when you're asleep. Into your tent, I'll creep, 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 creep. The stars above. Da, 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 da. Bring it up there, man. La da da da. La da 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 da. La da 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 da. Wa da 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 da. Ba 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 ba. Sometimes that's about all you can do. Sit here and pick your teeth and whistle a Sheik of Araby. Watch the moon go by and figure it'll all work out in the end sometime. All work out. Keep your knees loose. Be ready to jump in any direction. And by the way, be careful of chicks that carry blue steel compacts. That's an entirely different breed. Just an entirely different world entirely. How'd you like to go juking tonight with old Shep, huh? How'd you like to get out of Big Jack's tonight, huh? We're going to have ourselves a lemon coke. We'll sit around and pick up a little old gal or two, huh? You want to go down there and do a little juking, huh? Put a couple quarters in the jukebox and hear old Ernie Tubb sing about you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make my life. Hey, you want to go down and do that, huh? Or would you like to go down and maybe just sit around the Bluebird and have a couple of beers, huh? Like to do that in Tennessee Williams country? Yeah, life is real, life is earnest. See you tomorrow night, King, after a big old basketball game. We'll just hang around a corner, knock down a couple of cheeseburgers, see how the birds fall, huh?